Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Thursday. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, Mississippi business leaders are calling for Medicaid expansion, but lawmakers remain deadlocked. Then, how registering to be an organ donor can save lives. Plus, Mississippi's dark history often is sanitized. A new book clears the air, bringing truth to light. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On this April 25th, Thursday, we begin with Mississippi lawmakers are expected to meet late this week to discuss if they will pass a bill expanding Medicaid benefits to the working poor. Both chambers remain split on how far they want to go to accomplish that. House Republicans are seeking a plan to expand Medicaid for folks who earn up to 135% of the federal poverty level, or about $20,000 a year for one person. Senate Republicans want the earnings cap to be lower, around $15,000 a year for people to qualify. Business leaders from across the state have been in Jackson this week calling on legislators to take action and not let the issue die. Our Kobe Vance speaks with Jack Reed Jr. He's chair of the R.W. Reed Company in Tupelo and is an outspoken proponent of Medicaid expansion in the state.
I was glad to come to the Capitol and forcefully and clearly set forth my position as a business person and as a former Mayor Tupelo that I absolutely believe the legislature should take advantage of the full opportunity to embrace all of our citizens that are 138% of the poverty level, except the $700 million that the federal government has offered us, and make sure that almost 100,000 of my fellow Mississippians have the privilege of health insurance, which I think every family in Mississippi certainly needs. I know they need it. And so I hope the legislature will take this opportunity that 40 other states have already taken and take advantage of.
Why do you think Mississippi needs to take this step in expanding Medicaid?
Because it's the right thing to do financially and morally. Financially, we've left in the last 10 years $1 billion a year on the table that could have been circulating through our economy. That's what this amounts to again if we pass it up again, another $1 billion a year. And for 4 years, it's a 100% match. After that, it's a 90-10 match. For every $1 we put in, federal government puts in $9. Any business person will tell you that's a deal that we would take in a minute. When I was mayor, we accepted, even during the recession in 2009 and 10, we accepted an 80-20 local match, 80-20, 80 federal, 20 local, and transformed our Main Street with the money we did from that, that we got from that. Financially, it's certainly the right thing to do. It also keep a lot of these rural hospitals and certainly bolster the other major hospitals that we have left. It would certainly help them with unreimbursed care. And by doing that, it would help the whole economies of the whole part of the state, every region of the state. Morally, I certainly think it's the right thing to do. I think how difficult it would be to have to weigh, you've got a sick family member deciding whether to take them into a doctor's office and beg for free care or be willing to accept just crippling debt that you'd be paying back for the rest of your life in order to get it. It's just not necessary. That's why 40 states have already taken advantage of it. We need to, too.
It seems like both chambers are at the table ready to go with some form of Medicaid expansion right now. The Senate is proposing a plan that would add up to 80,000 new participants who could earn up to 100% of the federal poverty level, and it would have the work requirement. For lack of better terms, if that work requirement isn't approved by the federal government, having a waiver, it's dead. Then on the House's side, they're wanting a little bit more wiggle room for people who earn a little bit above the federal poverty level, 135% right. of the federal poverty level. And they are more willing to work with the federal government. If they don't get that waiver, their plan would still move forward. But those details are where we are at a standoff right now. What are your thoughts on seeing the state pretty close, like closer than we've ever been before to this issue, but still at such a standstill?
I think the Senate ought to rethink their position and realize that maybe once in a lifetime a legislator has an opportunity to do something that would affect for years and years and years the not only the health of our citizens, but the economy of the state. And they ought to go ahead and take the full amount that the federal government is offering and figure out a way to use both private carriers and public carriers, so the people that are providing the insurance to some of these people that would still be available should still be able to do that. The other states that have figured out ways to do that, they are creative enough and I know sharp enough to figure out a way that they ought to be able to accommodate everybody, and they need to go full speed ahead. We don't need to just tiptoe into this. We need to take care of everybody.
Do you think that the two chambers are going to be able to come up with a solution before the end of the session?
I hope and pray they do. They could. It's up to them. They're human beings with minds and hearts, and they ought to – the Senate needs to take a fresh look at it and be for it. And if and they need enough votes to override the governor's veto, he needs to rethink it. Good gosh, I don't know what a governor of all the people of the state of Mississippi, I don't think Governor Reeves is willing to turn in his health insurance for him and his family and his children. You know, they need to put themselves in the position of all these people that could be helped this session. If we take advantage of this, something we haven't done for 10 years, it could make a real difference in the forever life of a lot of families in this state and our economy. Business will prosper from it. The hospitals will prosper from it. The state will prosper from it. And I think it's the right thing to do. And I hope the Senate will figure out, with the conferees, will figure out a way to get it done. It's not too late. They shouldn't dig in and give up now.
Jack Reed Jr. is a business leader from Tupelo and the city's former mayor. He's one of dozens of business leaders who rallied at the Capitol this week calling for full Medicaid expansion. After this quick break, how registering to be an organ donor can save lives. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, host of the original Southern Remedy, the show where I answer your medical questions. Subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on any podcasting app.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. It's National Donate Life Month. The Mississippi Organ Recovery Agency, known as MORA, is calling on people to register as an organ donor. More than 1,300 Mississippians right now are waiting for an organ transplant. Many could die before a compatible donor is available. Our Kobe Vance talks to Belinda Lane, Community Outreach Coordinator with the Organ Recovery Agency. She says a single body donated after death can save or improve the lives of up to 75 people.
Every 9 minutes, someone will be added to that wait list. And the more Mississippians that register, the better. In addition to the fact that only 3 out of 1,000 people will even pass away in a way that they can actually be an organ donor. So we need more Mississippians to register for that reason.
And so even somebody who might be registered, given the conditions of their death, might not be able to donate all the parts.
Exactly. So one organ donor can save up to 8 lives. One tissue donor can impact over 75 lives. And so when you start to think about the organs that can impact someone else's life and help them to live on, to me, it's a no-brainer. And also the fact that one tissue donor can impact over 75 lives. And that includes things like, for instance, a lot of times people are not aware that tissue is something that can change a person's, not necessarily save their life, but it can make them have a better sense of life. For instance, a breast cancer patient. Tissue can be used to help women who have reconstructive surgery. And I say reconstructive surgery in women and because I do know that men can have breast cancer as well. But when it comes down to women who have reconstructive surgery, sometimes they need additional tissue. And so that tissue impacts their lives greatly because whereas it's not life-saving, it's life-altering. So we encourage people to be registered organ, eye, and tissue donors for those reasons.
I believe I also saw in y'all's release how eyes can be another important thing for somebody. You know, it can be life-changing, give somebody their sight back.
Right. So if you have corneal blindness, then one of the things that when you think about donating the cornea is that you can give sight to those folks that have corneal blindness. Exactly. So that impacts people as well.
Now, whenever somebody does register to donate their body, they do pass away in a way that is, you know, still usable. What happens?
Nothing drastic or strange happens. We procure those organs. The organs are procured at our facility, and then the funeral home is called in to take the body. Usually it takes about anywhere between 4 to 6 hours, depending on the organs, and the funeral home comes, and they will take the body on to the funeral, and people can still have an open casket funeral.
So this is not necessarily taking anything away from the families as they want to have that memorial service.
Absolutely. No, it does not take anything away. The only thing it does is help to save someone else's life.
What is it like for somebody who is on this waiting list to be able to finally find out that they have a donor that's available?
Of course, sometimes they'll find themselves having mixed emotions because on one side, you know that someone had to pass away in order for you to receive those organs. And then on the other side, they're excited because they get a chance or an opportunity to have an extended life as a result of receiving those organs. For instance, right now, I know several people who are in need of kidneys, and kidneys are the organ that's needed the most. So when you think about taking someone off of dialysis, you think about them not having to go to dialysis each day or 3 times a week or what have you. They get to live as normal as possible again. So it makes a huge difference in their life, the things that they can do, how carefree they can be, and how they can go on about their daily routines and enjoy their families.
How much does compatibility play into what y'all are asking for?
Oh, it plays a huge role. However, you don't have to be the same race. You don't have to be the same sex. But it does play a huge role in that, of course, if you are a match and you're compatible, then chances are your lifespan is going to be much longer.
Also on your release, I did see that, you know, of the people, I believe it was 1,300 people that are on the waiting list, about 1,200 of them are people that are needing kidneys. What does that show to you to be able to say, like, the amount of need that's in that specific field?
In Mississippi, we don't consider being registered donors as much. And only about 36% of Mississippians are registered. And so when you talk about that number of 1,300, there are over 1,300 people on that wait list right now. And it says that that's not at the top of our minds until it happens to someone in our families, one of our friends or loved ones. And so we need to think about those things beforehand, which is why we encourage people that when you're going to your driver's license station and they're asking the question, would you like to be a registered donor? We encourage people to say yes to the question. A lot of times people say no because they're not really educated about organ tissue donation. So those things that we don't know about, we tend to say no immediately. But we want people to be educated about it and understand that it's a life-changing situation for someone out there who is in need of a life-saving organ.
Belinda Lane is with the Mississippi Organ Recovery Agency. Folks can sign up to be an organ donor online or when applying or updating hunting or driver's licenses. Next, Mississippi's dark history is often sanitized. A new book seeks to clear the air. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
At Mississippi Public Broadcasting, we tell local stories that matter. Educational and entertaining television, radio, news, and podcasts. We have something for everyone. So tune in and enjoy all we have to offer. Every day, MPB. Your stories, our mission.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Slavery was an oppressive system that advanced the economic interest of white slave owners in the South, but some stories try to paint it as a benefit for the enslaved. Fictions that have been handed down try to make it sound like slaves are treated well and respected when historical facts show that's far from the truth. A new book seeks to clear up those notions, and the author says it's dedicated to helping white folks better understand state history. Here's James Wiggins. He wrote the new book, Outliving the White Lie, A Southerner's Historical, Genealogical, and Personal Journey.
Over the course of, you know, my years teaching community college, I picked up over time that there were many, many aspects of American history, much as Southern history and the history of race and slavery, that ordinary people don't know, because I was not, of course, teaching other historical scholars. I was talking to, you know, a general class at community college and survey classes, and then I created adult education classes for the community. And over time, it became very apparent what people didn't know that I thought they should know about it, particularly aspects of this history that are very, very relevant to the present day. And so that's how I got started in this, looking into the lies that we tell one another and lies that we tell ourselves about slavery and race in our local history, regional history, and national history, things we should know but don't know. And so this is not a book primarily drawn from any primary research that I've done. What I'm trying to do here is to translate the insights of scholars, the best scholars working over the last 50 years, and translate it for the general reading public, intelligent non-scholars of history. And so I kept the book comparatively short. It's under 300 pages with relatively short chapters. And I've covered topics from the brutal nature of slavery for the enslaved to the harm it did, that slavery did to the interest of white, non-slaveholding Southern majority, then the deliberate creation and propagation of racial identity and prejudice by the master class in order to maintain those non-slaveholders' support for the system that was actually harming their interest. And then I go on into the relationship of slavery to secession, Civil War, then into Reconstruction, Jim Crow, Civil Rights Movement, right up more or less to the present day.
What are some of the errors in thinking that we see in your estimation?
One of the ones that stands out to me, and of course there are many of them, is the idea that since antebellum slavery was capitalist, and capitalists, as capitalists, must take care of their assets out of rational self-interest, that therefore slave masters in the South must have treated their enslaved people relatively well because they were good businessmen. And therefore, it has been said that even though slavery represented a denial of freedom, still the people enslaved had adequate nutrition and housing. They had incentives rather than violent coercion. Brought about greater productivity, that family breakups were relatively rare. It's remarkable how often I still hear these kinds of things. So you add it all up, oh, slavery wasn't necessarily all that bad. Well, These sorts of assertions have been pretty thoroughly contradicted by the evidence assembled by historians, again, over the last 50 to 60 years. And an example that I used in the book to explain how the self-interested capitalist looked at their enslaved assets. In 1840, Natchez, Mississippi experienced one of the worst tornadoes in American history, the second highest death toll of any tornado in our history, 317 dead. But it was taken for granted, it is taken for granted, that that number is a gross undercount of the total deaths, because at that time, in Natchez in 1840, but elsewhere around the country, any enslaved people who were killed were not counted as part of the human death toll. Now, they were counted, but as property values lost, not as humans who have been killed. So, yes, enslaved people were valued by their capitalist masters, but as property right alongside their livestock and their furniture.
When people finish reading this book, what have they learned conceptually in a nutshell?
Well, I certainly hope they have learned a lot of these specifics, like I talked about the realities of race and slavery down through time. But I also hope through my example, the fact that I use my ancestors to tell the story and I use myself and my own errors and flaws to tell the story, that this is a subject that we can take on. This was not an easy book for me to write. It did not make me comfortable. But, you know, I survived. We can do this. We should do this. I'm bold enough to say it's our patriotic duty to do it, because this is one of the big problems we have in this country. And again, I'll say I think that's one of the sources of the crisis we're in right now as a country, is that we haven't been honest about our history, and we continue to not want to be honest about our history. So hopefully we'll start challenging that.
Well, we really appreciate you speaking with us. James Wiggin, the author of Outliving the White Lie, A Southerner's Historical, Genealogical, and Personal Journey.
Thank you very much. I greatly enjoyed it.
This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.